Thanks to our sponsor, Walker Digital, who've stepped in to help the Numbers Game podcast with their social media. Walker Digital are a digital marketing agency covering strategy, content, video, implementation, and education. The team at Walker have spread the word of our clients and love working with businesses doing good things, helping them to grow and reach more people so they can scale and get larger. I know personally, the first thing I did when growing our business was to outsource social media, blogs, and copywriting because I knew it was something that was not the best use of my time. And the team at Walker Digital smashed it. Sometimes you need to walk before you can run. Find out more at their website, wlkr.digital. This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed. Welcome to episode 41 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jason. I'm here with Nick and Marty for another business-focused episode. Hey guys, how are we going? How are we feeling?
Yeah, going good, Jace. I'm up and about. We're talking business, so I'm up and about, feeling good. And we're going to talk a bit about profit today, so I'm very excited. Nick, how are you going?
Well, profit and business. It doesn't get any better than that. And
don't worry about the business. Just the profit, mate. Just the profit. No, go on.
I'm not going to lie. Every second episode, I do really look forward to because, you know, business is what we do. As much as I love all the others, the odd numbers. The even numbers, the odd numbers just excite me a little bit more. So I'm pumped. Jace is going to tell us about, I guess, what our profit needs to look like. So excited to hear that.
All over it after 2 days on the Gold Coast with a bunch of accountants who were talking about their businesses. I must say, once again, you know, you don't hear a lot of people focus on profitability, but I think we should be focusing on it. It's important. It's one of those major things that, you know, we need to consider when going into business. What is that bottom line meant to look like? And you know, it's not the be-all and end-all driver of getting out of bed in the morning, but I tell you what, you need it there to keep your business humming and performing. So on today's show, Marty, as part of the warm-up, what are you going to be talking about?
Well, I'm going to be talking about, you know, healthy profit. A business with good profit, that's the healthier business, really. So I'm going to talk to you about why it is important and how we actually look at profit and the way we utilize profit. Nick, what about yourself?
For me, it's managing profit and just, you know, some real basics to make sure that you manage it and you don't get 6 months down the track or into the fin year and you realise it's not where it wanted to be. So just some tips on managing it ongoing.
And Jace?
I'll be talking about how to know what your profit percentage should be. Is it industry specific? Is there just a one size fits all approach? We're going to dive into that, have a bit of a chat about that.
Oh, it's exciting stuff. Let's play.
Reading the play, as we know every week, we're talking about interesting advice, industry insights, facts that we've come across, interesting stories, and things to just help you in your business ventures and day-to-day life. And we're going to throw it to you first, Marty. You've got something. We've spoken a bit about our old boy Putin in the past couple of episodes. There's plenty on our minds when it comes to Russia, Ukraine, everything going on in the world. And I think your reading the play brings Russia into it. Tell us what's going on.
I'm just thinking, I'm just a little bit concerned that Russia is going to cause a potential wider recession with everything that's going on. And as we know, Russia is a major supplier of oil, natural gas, and nickel. And given what's going on in the Ukraine and sanctions being placed on Russia, certainly the oil price is jumping up and about a bit. So to give you an example, a couple of years ago, a barrel of oil, well, even going back just over 2 years ago, it was down to $33 Australian per barrel. A couple of years ago, $58 per barrel, jumped up in 2022 in Feb to $138 per barrel, and it's just come under $100 per barrel now, thanks to Saudi Arabia saying they'll release more oil reserves. But the interesting part about that is, even if we go back to the 70s and we look at any time the oil price has gone up 100% in an 18-month period, we've had a recession within 6 months, not only locally but globally. So it's really interesting how big an impact that oil price has, because it affects so many areas like energy. I mean, we're looking at petrol, we're nearly talking about $3 a litre we're going to end up being at. But it does affect a lot of different areas, which of course not only pushes up inflation, but then the cost of living. I think I read somewhere cost of living's gone up 25% we're spending out of our income now on just general bills and just surviving. So that's a good chunk. It's a quarter of our pay. Throw in a mortgage, bit of childcare, and you know, it's not so easy out there. So yeah, but like I said, I'm not a doomsday type of guy anyway. I always think the property market's going to be stable because we can rely on that. But it is interesting to see what's going on here and the pressures that are being put on from global things that are happening. And fingers crossed we're not going into a bloody full-scale war with China now wanting to support some ammo to Russia, which is not a good sign either. But yeah, this is how sensitive the market is. So yeah, just a short point. Comment, fellas?
Yeah, I'll drop a quick comment in there because it relates back to profitability. There's talks coming out, and I saw Gavin from the CPA went out and did an article that went onto Accountants Daily website and shared around, but it was, if you're looking at your profitability over the coming 6 to 12 months, you need to be factoring in what $3 a litre does to your business and then stress testing what it does to go beyond that. Especially
point.
If you're in transport, if you've got a business that relies on putting petrol in cars to get things from A to B or trucks, if you're not assessing what that does to your profitability and how fast you can change your top line income to match the outgoings of your business, that's coming straight off your bottom line from a profitability point of view. So these are all the things that we, in a world of inflation and potential recession, what are we putting in place to protect our businesses and protect that bottom line? So I think it's a beautiful, beautiful point, Marty, in this episode.
And it may well normalize, Jace, like, you know, in the next 3 or 4 months and everything will be okay. But that point is really important because, again, you've got a budget for this because, you know, expense shipping, it's all of it. It all pushes prices up. Nick, any further comment on that?
Oh, no, I think it's, I obviously think it's crazy, but, you know, we've been a lot of chat about Elon Musk, but I'd just say to just consumers and individuals, if you haven't looked at buying an electric car, maybe it's time to look at it because it doesn't just have to be a Tesla. My neighbours have got a $35,000 car. I can't remember what it is, but it's a electric car. They paid $35,000 for it, so... You know, if this isn't a sign that it's time to start considering those things, electric cars and whatnot, definitely do that. And yeah, for businesses, definitely. And not just the impact that extra cost will have, but you know, how can you deviate or how can you pivot what you've been doing to eliminate those costs? So, is there a way you can do less travel? Is there a way you can put less fuel in your vehicles or whatever it might be. It just goes so deep. You know, you look at airlines, you'll end up paying more for tickets again to fly. So if you're a business that's flying around, do you have to review what you're doing there because the price of your flights have gone up? So there's so many things beyond the petrol price for so many businesses. So it's a really good point from Gavin. Was it Gavin?
Yep.
Yeah.
Gavin.
Yeah, it's good.
Gavin Ord. Shout out. I know the CPA are listening. They're checking in on me. Make sure I don't say anything I shouldn't. So,
oh, well, that's probably a good segue. It is a good segue into what I'm going to talk about, which is, you know, more holes in our pockets. But, and this is something that has not happened for a long time. And I think I spoke about this earlier in the year that this was coming. But they're expecting residential rents to increase by 12 to 15% this year. And that's something that hasn't happened for a long time. So vacancy rates, for those that don't know, means the amount of properties that are actually available. So vacancy rates have plummeted to a 16-year low. Now, what this does is it adds to the inflation issue because as, you know, the price of rent goes up, which is the price, which is a cost of living, that adds to the inflation issue, which then puts more stress on interest rates. So the available rentals have dropped from 1.3% in January to 1.2% in February, which is the lowest level since December 2006. So all markets in our country are now in a rental undersupply. So basically when you get below, so a balanced market is 3%. So when there's 3% vacancy rates, that's what they call a balanced market. We're at 1.2% at the moment, so significantly unbalanced. So what they're saying is we could see rents rise by 10% this year. The quarterly growth for the first quarter was 3.2%. So if you annualize that out, you get 12.8% if it keeps going that way. There's a few factors. The first factor is all of the government regulation that came in last year. Well, not last year, when COVID hit. So everything was very pro-tenant. So, you know, and for good reason. So tenants couldn't get booted out. But, you know, there's little things now in Victoria where, you know, tenants have the ability to paint a wall. Tenants can do a lot of things to the property that they never used to. Tenants can now have pets in there, which is, you know, I think that's actually a good thing. That's for mental health and, you know, being able to have a companion. There's a lot of things you've got to do now as a landlord around compliance, smoke alarms, these sorts of things. So the cost of actually maintaining a rental property are going up and up and up and up and up. So what we saw last year with the rise in the value of the property market, Jay, she talked about 23% last year, a lot of landlords have cashed in. They've gone, it's all too hard. I had a tenant that couldn't pay their rent last year, so I had to cop all that. They've painted three of the walls purple. So it's just I've got to now pay $500 a year for someone to go and inspect the smoke alarms. The rates have gone up by $300 a year. So all that the insurance has gone up because of flooding and fires. So landlords are actually exiting, taking their win, that 23%. That you talked about last week, which means there's less properties available to rent. That's the first thing. Second thing is there's a new surge in international students. Borders are open again. So everyone that left all those properties, they're all now coming back. So inner city apartments and whatnot, they're filling up, and that's going to continue to happen. The other thing is, or the other factor is, and this hasn't even hit these, so these stats I'm rattling off, doesn't factor this in yet, but it's the recent floods in New South Wales and Queensland. So not only have you got places that are flooded and are not available, you've got people that were in those places that now need somewhere else to live. So there's actually a shortage of properties in those flooded areas. I know the Queensland government is actually encouraging people that own holiday houses to put them up for long-term rental. Because there's such a shortage, so it's really interesting to watch. It's from an investment point of view, from an investor point of view, it's a great thing because rentals have been so stagnant for so long. However, from an overall economy point of view, and you know, looking at consumers that need to rent properties, it's not a great thing. You know, we're talking about the increasing price of petrol, you know, doubling. We're talking about bread, milk, all this stuff is just going to continue to go up. Add to that, you've now got to pay 10 to 15% more just to put a roof over your head. It's a pretty scary thing. So,
and add interest rate potential hikes discussions at the back end of it, you can see why the landlords are putting up the rentals. But like you just said there, I think we talked about in the last episode, lower to middle income earners getting an extra $1,000. I think they need an extra $10,000 just to deal with what's going on in the market. And again, it comes back to, you know, really income, not right, wages not increasing. And we really need new property at a lower buy-in price. Mm. We just have to have that. We have to have an alternate option to get people into the market that is affordable, because otherwise, there could be a huge problem here. Mm. But great stats.
Mm. So you've said another one there, Marty, that just, you know, there's things that trigger the profit thing in my brain. You said wages increasing. So if you're a business owner, you're not factoring in an increase in wages for employees putting their hands out saying, boss, petrol's gone up, my landlord just jacked up my rent, and, you know, the weekly wage you're giving me is not stretching as far as it used to, I need a pay rise. So another one that's going to hit the bottom line of business owners out there.
And we certainly went through that last year, I would think, already. Mm. Nick, we're on the front of the wave of that, where we could see that happening, and we sort of paid in advance, really. So because of it. So I think other businesses will be under pressure to do that as well. So, Jace, what do you got for us? That was great, Nick.
Well, guys, something that I found and read that hit home, because it's personal, a great personal story that I loved, is The story of Atlas. Have you boys ever had dinner at Atlas in South Yarra? It's a restaurant that changes its menu every 3 or 4 months.
I have once. Nick, you've yeah.
Hand up.
It was brilliant. Yeah.
Yep. So Charlie Carrington and his brother Ben, they got Charlie's got this restaurant Atlas. So the thing, Marty, with Atlas is he used to travel all over the world, go and experience food, and then he'd come back and say, "Cool, for the next three or four months, it's going to be India." And he'd have an India set menu. It'd have matching drinks. Big shout out to Charlie's a big fan of Death Gin. They have a paired Death Gin or a Death Gin with each menu item or each menu change. They do a Death Gin. So that's, I love that. That's awesome. But that's not why he's in here today. then at the moment, I think it's just switched to Italian. So they've got this Italian degustation, epic food, absolutely amazing. But think back to 2 years ago, guys, what was happening on roughly this date 2 years ago. ScoMo was getting on TV announcing restrictions for COVID and that businesses like Charlie's Atlas weren't going to be able to have people in to dine on these beautiful, you know, set menu, you know, feasts. And that wasn't something that was easily translated for people to take that home and you know, go and pick up a box of takeaway for a 7-course menu or whatever it was. So Charlie and his brother Ben straight away pivoted, which was the word Nick used earlier, which I just noted down, that pivot word. You know, the pivot was to basically not just be another takeaway restaurant offering food, but to become a premium at-home meal service where, like HelloFresh and those kind of, you know, meals that they would ship, they would have a box delivered to your door of all the ingredients you'd need for 3 amazing meals for you and your partner or you and your family. And what would happen is Charlie would do a live Instagram video showing you how to cook each meal, the 3 meals for the week. So people, it created something for people at home during the pandemic to do was to jump in, cook these meals, watch a video. You could add comments and talk to other people that were at home cooking too. But then very quickly that got hard. So we went to posting the videos of each menu onto like YouTube, onto the website. And it was called Atlas Masterclass. Now, where am I going with this? So in 4 weeks of launching, it went from 10 employees to 75 employees. It exploded. Their social media followers all jumped on this. People at home who were like, cooking and having the family together and having that experience, but a really premium kind of offering where the vegetables were, the fruit and veg was fresh and amazing. And some of it would come pre-prepared with the right spices and everything.
Make them be hungry, Joe.
Quick and easy. But anyway, so they were doing $1 million per month in turnover for this new side hustle they'd created. Some days they're doing 100K a day. The brother Ben has moved to Sydney to continue to grow the Sydney market. This business is now valued, a business that didn't exist. So they've still got the restaurant in South Yarra, but then this now, they've moved it from Atlas Masterclass to what's called Atlas Weekly. So each week, obviously, you get your different meal kit from a different place all over the world and follow the cuisines. They are moving towards a goal of 2,000 orders a week, and it's $78 a box. Now, it's $78 a box for 3 meals for you and your partner. So that's for a couple. So Case and I did this all the time during lockdown, and it was almost like a bit of a lifesaver in a way that it just gave us something to look forward to at the end of the day, to jump in the kitchen together, follow the menu, something that wasn't too consuming on the brain after a tough day in the home offices. At $78 a box at 2,000 orders, that's $156 per week or annual revenue of $8 million with ambitions to then double that again. I love it, guys. That's just a story I wanted to share of, you know, what can happen when you think outside the Atlas Weekly box and you have a crack at turning what was a COVID shitstorm into an absolutely incredible business opportunity now.
I love that. You were going to say the value of the business?
Yeah, so they just had it valued at $7 million if they wanted to offload it. So
not bad. Thanks, so COVID.
I didn't realize I didn't say it. But yeah, $7 million on top of, you know, that, and that's a separate business structure, obviously, to their restaurant. Mm. So they've kept that separate from a risk and asset protection point of view. But yeah, Charlie and Ben, Charlie, I've met personally, absolute ripping fella. If you head into South Yarra for a dinner at the restaurant, say good day to Charlie. He's a legend and I'm bloody stoked for him. Because
I love that. I love that, Jace. I just think, how do people scale so quickly? The aggression, like the pivot, magnificent, but the aggression in scale. Like I go, that, and that's something we'll talk about in a minute too. But I just think that They've just gone all in on it and it's paid off.
Well, they couldn't use the kitchen in the restaurant because it got too big too fast. So at first it was like, what can we do? He actually came from a point of motivation of, I've got staff that I still want to pay. I didn't want to rely on JobKeeper or government handouts, and I wanted to keep people in a full-time job. So the motivation was, what can we do? Like, I've got these employees, I've got these 10 people who are meant to be sitting at home doing nothing while the restaurant's closed. We're just going to pick and pack boxes and load it up and send them out to people. And yeah, the fact that within 4 weeks they couldn't use the kitchen at the restaurant, they had to hire a big commercial kitchen out at a racecourse facility. And then you imagine going from 10 employees to 75, like really fast. And yeah, incredible.
I love the optimism in thinking on the pivot and using their capabilities given the market changes. And Nick and I talk about this a lot, where we all do, in regards to how you need to pivot with what the market provides you. Don't get stuck on an old strategy that's no longer relevant. Now it's back relevant, but you know, for 2 years it wasn't. But I think that's incredible. But what astounds me is just the level of scale and execution within 2 years. I just think that's phenomenal to go to that many staff members and just go all in on that, on a pivot. I just think that's incredible.
I think the other thing just to touch on as well is the power of social media. Like, he threw that idea out to his socials and just said, hey, I'm thinking about starting this. Who would be interested? And I think within 15 minutes, 80 people commented, I'm in. Like, I'll buy that box. Like, if you're going to put something together and I can't come to your restaurant, I'll buy it. So he tested the market with his followers too. He didn't just launch it thinking everyone's going to love it. He put the question out there before he dived all the way in and tested the market, did a bit of research. And, in those kind of, you know, when COVID happened and the pandemic hit, if you didn't have a loyal customer base, if you didn't have followers you could spread a message to, they're the businesses that probably did it the most tough. Like, I got a cafe out in Clyde that has an amazing following on Instagram and social media. And those business owners would jump on a video and say, guys, we're still available for takeaway coffee. Come down and visit us, blah, blah. And people would rock up being like, oh, I saw your Instagram video this morning. I wanted to come down and show my support. So I'm here to buy some coffees this morning and some takeaway breakfast. So power of social media too.
One last thing on that. I'm very excited by this story because I just feel like they had a foundational piece where they were going around the world and bringing in, you know, new foods into the restaurant. So they had that as a foundation, and it's like they created that digitally out there in the market, and they created the same experience. I'm fascinated whether it was the food and the initial brand or the social, you know, the content they were producing in order to get the scale, because that is, that's something we talk about a lot too. We've got a lot of thought processes around digital marketing and relevant digital marketing. But I get the feeling it was both for them.
Yeah, I think the experience as well, like, again, speaking from personal experience, 1 week we're in Greece, the next week we're in Italy, the next week we're in Turkey, the next week we're in Japan. Like, it just kept those weeks of being locked down in COVID kind of ticking by. And I know that we're not in that lockdown phase anymore, but giving you something different to look forward to each week, like, people get into their mundane kind of week to week, you know, keeps things interesting.
Here's a story that sort of goes the other way. There was a restaurant on the Sunshine Coast that did around the world menus. Every Thursday night, you could eat in a different country, and they went bankrupt because they couldn't pivot.
Too hard to change that every week too. At least Charlie's doing the same menu for 4 months.
Yeah.
He tweaks it halfway through. But so some people would go there in the first 2 months, let's say first 2 months of India. And then in the next 2 months of India, he tweaks the menu so that you can actually go and do India twice.
Yeah.
So he doesn't limit you from coming once every 4 months. So
it's a great product. It's a great great value as well. What did you say it was for three meals?
$78, three meals for you and your partner.
So that's $26 a meal. Pretty bloody good. Now, you could probably eat cheaper if you shopped at Coles, but it won't be as good.
$13 a head, you can buy, you know, your pre-packaged really tiny crap meals for $9.95.
Yeah, it's like, just great. That's
and then
the at
$13 with the chicken and the meat and the vegetables, like I can't walk into Woolies and get veggies as fresh as what he was delivering. And I think that was the comparison. We'd pull out like the biggest, freshest looking zucchini you've ever seen, but if I walked into Woolies to try and buy a zucchini, it'd be a little bit shriveled up and crap and.
But his valuation's just gone up to 10 million because we're all on board, and all the listeners will be jumping on too.
Love it.
Good on you, Charlie.
We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au.
Well, we'll get into losing it, guys. Here we are again at Marty's favourite segment. And Marty, believe it or not, you've re-grabbed the losing it segment. I feel like it's been a couple of weeks since you've had your time to shine. I think I took a couple. Nick took last week's. But Marty, you are back. It is your segment. It is losing it. What are you losing it over?
Oh, mate, I've ripped my pockets open. Coins are dropping out of them. It's a big one today. But coming off the back of what I love with Charlie's idea, when we talk about with the restaurant, I've always wondered, and I still haven't got the answer. Now that I've listened to Charlie, I think I should have gone bigger. Like going all in on an idea, like being really – really bullish on an idea and just going on the attack. Because I hear stories like that, and that's why I was so animated during it, where I go, I think if you know something's going to work and you know that the numbers are going to back you, you go all in. But look, I've certainly had circumstances, I've heard other business owners have circumstances where they go all in on an idea and it actually blows up the existing business that's working well. So let's say, for instance, Charlie continued, there wasn't COVID, he continued his restaurant and had this idea that was this new idea. For me, I would have gone all in on the new idea and forgotten about the thing that, you know, potentially was the foundation of the business. And I would have felt compromised, but I would have gone for it. But I remember being in a specific situation where I was putting on a commercial division on a business that was residential mortgages. We went to commercial mortgages. We hired two people in Victoria that were probably writing a third of one of the big bank's new business to bank. So I knew they were the right people and I knew the massive upside it could produce for our business. So we went all in and it was probably about 3 months in and I'd budgeted it, but I budgeted for more income to be coming in sooner than it was coming in, thinking it was similar to the resi business when I first started, where we could turn it around really quick in revenues. And 4 months in went, no income. And I reckon we were 2 months off jeopardizing the whole business because of going all in on an idea. And I remember coming home one night, talking to my wife about Cole and saying, holy crap, if these guys can't produce in the next 2 months, it's not that we didn't have any debt against the business, but the backup was like, we're just going to have to shut it down because we're going to run out of the cash reserves that the good business had created at that time. Now, we were very fortunate in the end that January, when we needed those revenues in as a last resort, we got them in. And it kicked from there, that point. And I just thought to myself, it can be such a fine line. And we hear about that side and it coming off, but there's so many times it doesn't. And look, I was nearly in that. I was nearly in with that where I could have decimated the whole business by being so bullish. And I think the lesson for me is, could I have incrementally tested it, you know, in a better way? Could I have taken baby steps instead of trying to eat the whole elephant at once? Is eating the whole elephant at once right? Because I just heard a story where they ate the elephant and the giraffe, you know, and got a $7 million valuation. Great for them. And then I go, what am I missing? But secondary, I think what is really important and the lesson for me is getting great people around me, because what I know to work well, it could be a timing issue. Like it could be literally a timing issue where your idea's right, but your timing's off. And have you catered for that in your budget? Have you misread it? But just to get good people around you to, you know, to be able to sort of give you some guidance and go, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you test it this way, not jeopardize the whole thing? Now, in hindsight, I've only shared this story today, but I was literally shitting myself. I thought, we've got people's wages on the line here, a lot of livelihoods on the line, and I've taken this bet and I thought it would work, but I was so close to it all, the cards collapsing. And, yeah, but a massive lesson for me, and that's why I've always got myself around good people after that, just to give me some guidance. But yet I still question, as I say it, I still question, because I hear stories like that where you go all in, you make it work, and it comes off. So I don't know whether it's my risk appetite issue, maybe I'm too gung-ho, but maybe, boys, give me some guidance on it. What do you think?
I think Marty... Sorry, Nick.
No, you go.
Look, you reminded me of a quick one, Marty, I can add to that, who was basically actually a losing it, but a similar thing, going all in on an idea without kind of properly assessing it, looking at profit margins, for example. And so I had this client who had a really, really profitable maintenance business in like air conditioning, mechanical maintenance kind of thing, and really, really good maintenance business. But then decided to also then start doing the installs because, you know, there's money to be made on installs as well. Took on what was like a $2 million installation project, which only had a 5% margin in it. So he was going to make $100,000 on doing $2 million worth of installs. Now that's fixed price. You commit to doing it. You get the team in there, got to do it. But so what ended up happening, I think, you know, using round numbers, maintenance business had a couple of $100,000 profit. Installation business made a couple of $100,000 loss, got to the end of the year, the whole business was thrown into a loss and cash flow was up shit creek because the assessing, like going into the installation business, but not actually thinking through how does that affect my maintenance business? Is it going to take me away? Am I going to be run thin because I'm trying to run installations and manage my maintenance team? So on and so forth. And yeah, went into it without fully understanding the whole, how it would affect operations and doing it all through the one entity and not looking at the profitability of sticking to what you're good at versus expanding on services that may actually, you know, ruin your operations overall. So yeah, goodbye, Marty. Good story to share.
Yeah, and I think I had a margin of safety. Like I always look at, I like to maintain my profit levels at, you know, 20-30%. I've always had that in mind when I'm doing anything. And I had modeled that out in the planning, but my timing was totally off. When I say totally off, it was probably about three months off, but it shows you that fine line, what it could have killed it. Mm. So it was like incredible. Yet now I'm sitting here, I'm still agitated because it was so stressful at the time. And I go, and yet you're still backing yourself and you're doing whatever it takes to get to the finishing line. But I was thinking about it, I thought so many wouldn't have got to that finishing line. And yeah, just your story is evidence of that. Jace as well, it really puts pressure on a business. Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately, this client didn't, you know, there's a lot of businesses out there that would liquidate, sink the ship, ATO would miss out on money, suppliers would miss out. This client just buckled down, worked their asses off to recover from it, shut down one side of the operations and focused on, you know, the profitable arm of the business, made the money back, used those losses, again, kind of like the capital losses, was able to use business losses to carry forward and offset future profits and live to see another day. But it, it could have easily gone really, really pear-shaped and ended up in the whole thing going under. And, not what we want for business owners.
Fine line. Nick?
Fine line.
Oh, I was just going to say, don't beat yourself up and compare yourself to Atlas. I think it it was fight or flight. You know, those guys had their business ripped away from them and they had to find a way to survive. So I think it's a bit of a different scenario, if that makes you feel any better. But the thing I get out of that, and, you know, we talk about this, but and we're very blessed that we have not only business partners that all think a little bit differently, but we also have an advisory board then to bounce that off. So, you know, when you or I or Geordie or whoever it is comes up with an idea, we've generally all got a different perspective on it. And we know that if we all agree, it's probably right. And then we'll take it to the advisory board. So, you know, if you're not in the fortunate position to have that like we are, you've still got your accountant, you know, you've still got if you don't have a network around you of business owners, get one. You know, join a group, do what you need to do, but make sure you've got people to bounce ideas like that off that can actually help you. So that's probably the key thing I picked up out of that.
Yeah, and we joke about it. We say we have an idea that we want to implement and we put it in the washing machine, you know, with Geordie, yourself, the advisors, and it usually comes out with a really good strategy on the back end. Yep. And Ray Dalio talks about that type of thing in his principles book. It's a great book. But we've sort of implemented that in our own strange way, haven't we, when you really think about it, that the idea is always executable in the end, and it usually makes really logical sense. And it probably just adds additional layers of method to the to the bullishness, which is really, you still need that to go in and create something great, but it's always that fine line. It's just having that sounding board can be the difference of doing it stressfully or doing it really in a controlled manner that works really well. It's congruent with everyone. It's good.
And this sort of, I guess, is a good segue to profitability, because it's really understanding what stress testing is. And I look at your example, and you said you were probably 3 months out as far as the income went. Now, hypothetically, you didn't have the backup to get you through that extra 3 months. You could have pulled the pin on that idea when it was the right one in the end. You just didn't get the timing right. You didn't get the stress testing right. So understand that, okay, well, if I think it's here, the worst case scenario is I might not see any income from this business for 9 months. So if it's 9 months, have I got the capital, have I got the profitability in my existing business to float that? What would have been an absolute disaster is if you had pulled it 7 months in when you really just had to let it go 9 months, and it was actually a game changer for your business in the end. But imagine if you couldn't get through that extra 3 months, and you pretty much wasted the whole process or the whole exercise. So really stress test it and then go beyond that.
You make a great point, mate, because we doubled our business on the back end of that strategy. But like you said, that 3 months, if it had been stress tested to 9 months, it would have been done more congruently and without stress, and it would have been great. But like I said, it's, you learn by being in the trenches. and that's why I like stress testing with people and ratios and methodology. It's certainly come a long way in 15 years, I can tell you.
So talking about profitability, boys, obviously I think you can tell I'm excited by the way I've rolled into this episode, just really up and about and talking about Charlie and all those things. But Marty, why don't you start us off with, some of your thoughts around profitability and the things that we need to consider and think about, with a profit mentality.
Yeah, well, I think the profit is the health of your business ultimately. And I've said this in previous episodes, where if you're doing all the hard work and you're not seeing a return on your investment, then what is the point of what you're doing? So to me, it's always starting at the end game of going, what do I want the profitability to be? Because we all have great ideas in how we want to execute our businesses, but that was always something that, and I'm not sure why that was ingrained into me. I think it was because I saw great businesses when I was a business banker have those ratios, and I saw businesses that really struggled were around 5%, and they were always living on the edge. So for me, I think I came out of seeing it in real time, and I always thought, all right, that's the position that I wanted to be in, is to make sure that we came to that profit point. And that sort of comes into the valuation of businesses. And then the other thing that's really great about getting your profitability right early in your business is that you can tend to be in survival mode in the first 2 years, because you're really trying to run hard to build cash flows and get traction. So, but for me, the quicker you can get a balance on and get a good read on your revenues coming in, you know what you're earning, you know what your profitability is, your decision making becomes more creative in the way you allocate capital for what you're going to do next, because you're sort of through that survival phase in business. And I think that's a different mentality. You can relax a bit more. But I found a lot of business owners that don't have that really are always under that duress, because they're going, geez, I've got to really see some more things on the bottom line. So I'm very fixed in my views on that. I feel like I can create strategy off the back end of the profit, and I go, as long as I know that's coming in. And also in regards to just minimizing costs in biz, I said to Nick the other day, and this is crazy, but in the first, probably in the first 3 years of the business, I would sit there and I would look at all the credits coming in and I'd look at all the debits coming out, and I would have an absolute read on where I was at and how I would trend month to month. So the accountant would come and do a presentation. I could have done that presentation because I was in real time. But I needed that to know that it was matching up my ratios. Once it got further down the track, and I probably could have let go of that a hell of a lot earlier than I did because it just became a habit, but I had a real clear read on my numbers and a real clear read on what I needed to do to get to the margins that I wanted to get to. And I found that a lot of businesses, and particularly when I was in the US doing some mentoring to small business owners, and even here in Australia, I've seen small businesses really die very quickly where they've had great ideas and they haven't concentrated on the relevancy of getting sales. You know, first, it doesn't matter how damn good the business looks at the start, you know, get those sales in, get the revenues coming in, make sure the market's responding to what you're putting out there, great customer service, and then you're filtering in to go, all right, well, what do I end up with on the back end here? I mean, it's very basic stuff, but so many business owners I see don't do that and get themselves into trouble. So for me, that's a big one. Clear your mind so you can focus on being creative in the way you grow the business, so you're out of survival mode by knowing your cash flows, know your profit, and your methodology and ratios around that. And also, I think what's interesting for me is just, you know, understanding the timings again. You know, how quickly do you need to get to that profitable stake? And what we talked about before with the business, when I started the business in the residential market, I was able to create those cash flows and ratios that I wanted to see within a 5-month period. So it's like I was going off something that was relevant in my mind, but it wasn't relevant in the commercial market, which the timings were probably, the lag time was 3 to 6 months more in settling a loan. So it was, I cost myself on not understanding that up front. But yeah, but definitely profitability leads strategy, and it certainly makes you sleep at night a lot better. But that's my two cents on it, Jace.
Ratios. I think we've heard Nick talk about ratios a fair bit. Do you have anything to add there, Nick, around that?
I guess the point I had was understand your ratios, and, you know, full transparency, I've been guilty of not having a handle on this. And I think it's, you know, going particularly from a small business to a medium-sized business, a lot of the times you're just not used to these phrases or these measurements. So, you know, when you're a small business, you're generally running pretty hard, generating a lot of revenue. You know, profitability is generally good because you're the main revenue driver. But when you start to bring in different layers of management, you start to bring in different revenue streams into your business, all of a sudden you've got all of this stuff going on, and a lot of it generally costs a lot of money. So, you know, you really need to understand your ratios from not just looking at your expenses, but, you know, what are you earning on certain revenues? What is the output to bring that revenue in? You know, what is your net result on bringing that revenue in? And look, the reason I struggled with it is because we had so many new people come into the business and new divisions that I wasn't necessarily controlling. I was doing what I was doing. We had someone looking after admin and operations, someone looking after sales. So I think what you need to do, like the thing that I learned, is you need to give people complete responsibility over those areas. And those people, well, they're the ones that have a handle on that particular division, for lack of a better word. And then they can dive into what those ratios should be. So a great example is our offshore team. So, you know, we didn't have an offshore team 3 years ago. Geordie has come in. He's built that out himself. Now, he understands that way better than I do. I wouldn't have the faintest idea about how certain things in that division work. So it's Jordan's responsibility to come up with the ratios. What can we do with this team? Where can we leverage them? What's their efficiencies? Where do they max out? Where do we need to hire someone else? So, you know, if you're a small business and you're going into a medium-sized business like we were, you need to lean on other people and you need to give them authority, I guess, or control over certain divisions and give them the responsibility to make sure those ratios are right. So, and then, you know, understand what you want your ratio to be, like your profitability ratio, and try and get there. And for us, and again, I'm happy to divulge, but for us, the last 3 years has all been about growth. And, you know, we made an executive decision that that's what we wanted to do. Profit was put to the side because we were changing tactic a little bit, although still being very much mortgage brokers and planners. There were some things internally we were doing that was a little bit of a different approach. And we knew that that was going to hurt profitability for at least 2 to 3 years. And it did hurt profitability. But then you get to a point where, okay, well, we achieved what we wanted to achieve. And this is where the conversation comes in around profitability versus reinvestment. But we achieved what we wanted to achieve. We created the model that we wanted to. We've got the business where it had to be. Now it's about profitability and making sure that what we've created through that reinvestment of the profits is actually doing what it was meant to do for us. And that's the focus now, which is going really well. So, yeah, it's understanding what you want out of your business. Is it profit? Is it growth? If it's growth, what do you need to invest? And then where are you trying to get to? And then once you've got that growth, how do you then make sure that it's absolutely humming? And that's where the ratios come in. And it's, we look at this stuff every week. It's not that's it and we just move on. It's stuff that we're consistently looking at, but making sure that all the money you've invested is actually getting you the return that you're seeking. Otherwise, what's the point? You need to look at it again and get it to where it wants to be, where it needs to be. So that's probably the ratio chat. And yeah, having different layers of responsibility in your business, because you can't be across everything.
Yeah, and it's been great, because understanding the ratios, we challenge expenses, we challenge reinvestment, and we're looking to get the most impact out of all of it. And I see it almost like a temperature gauge on a heater that sits between, you know, 20, 25 degrees, maybe 25 to 30 degrees. But it's like you're going to go outside of those parameters, those temperatures occasionally based on the strategy you're implementing, but you sure as hell want to know your timings to get back into those sweet spots as well. So they're the sort of things that's the way I think about it. If I'm simplifying it, I'm going, okay, I'm taking a punt here, but I want to see myself back in this range by this time. Mm. That's why timings are important and planning is important to match the execution of the ratios as well. So,
yeah.
Jace, what do you think is a healthy profit margin? What from businesses you've seen? Like, I've seen in the bank, but from your perspective as an accountant.
To be honest, Marty, I'm glad you asked. It is so different across so many different industries. And, you know, I've pulled up a couple of different stats to kind of run through with you boys and just have a bit of a chat about what you think of these numbers and whether you think they're accurate, wrong, or not. But, I mean, yeah, just at a high level before I dive into numbers and bore your pants off for 2 minutes. The profit margins you should be aiming for, you got to kind of get a good understanding of that from the start. Why are you going into business? Why are you doing this? And what's that number need to look like to support your family or help you achieve your goals and to align with your values? Like, if you want to be able to give back to the community and spend more time with your family or whatever it is you're working for, what's that number on the bottom need to be? And then you can't just make up a number. Like, you know, as an accounting firm, you know, using accounting firms as an example, on revenue, on total revenue, they say 30% should go to profit, 30% should go to wages, and 33% goes to operating expenses. Now, I tell you what, as a firm, Future Advisory is nowhere near 30%. We've done growth, we're young, we're paying our team really well. You know, it's going to take us a bit of time to get from, you know, a few percent, 5%, 10%, and then work our way up to something near 30%, but I don't think I'll be able to match industry benchmark. And that's something you need to understand as a business owner. What is the industry benchmark of percentage for the business that you're operating? Whether it's a coffee shop, whether it's the gym down the road, whether you're in manufacturing or mortgage broking, understanding how you stack up versus the industry is one thing. And then also making your own judgments on what you're okay with. So an example or somewhere that you can look if you're like, well, how do I find my industry benchmarks? The ATO has small business benchmarks on the ATO's website. You can Google ATO small business benchmarks, limited industries, and it's not necessarily going to be the best because, You know, let's say the coffee shop may not be telling the ATO everything they're earning and what their true profit is, but the ATO reports the industry benchmarks of profit for a coffee shop. What's actually really interesting, I looked that up, and effectively after all the income, looking at a coffee shop that does more than 600,000 turnover, they expect, or based on industry data, 91% of that money disappears on expenses, like wages, cost of sales, total expenses, 91% gone. So you got 9% left over. So if you're running $1 million revenue cafe, you got 90 grand left over at the end of the year. So what you got to think about is, am I okay with getting out of bed every day to work my ass off to be there at 6 a.m. pouring coffees and doing whatever I'm doing with the stress of staff and whatever, if I get to the end of the year and have 90 grand, is that good for me? Am I happy with that? Lifestyle-wise, hey, it may align with everything you do. You love getting up and serving people every day, and you're happy to get to the end of the year with your wage, 90 grand, boom, coffee shop's your way to go. Looking at, so then what we do to expand on that, the ATO small business data, you know, there's not a lot from an industry perspective of you can deep dive and look into. So we actually subscribe to what's called IBIS World Industry Reports. So IBIS World, I think you can get some relatively like summarized versions of it for free off the IBIS World website. But as an example, so I'm looking at the, you can't see on my screen, but I'm looking at the IBIS World report for cafes and coffee shops. It's a 30-page document that goes into granular detail about competitive landscape, costs that go into it, how to differentiate, all these things. But what it reports is that profit is actually between 4% and 6% of revenue. So it's even less than what the ATO are reporting. So again, you know, it's different for every industry. IBIS World reports that mortgage broking should be between 13% and 17%. So I'd be interested to see what you guys feel of those numbers from a profit on the bottom line when all things are said and done for a mortgage broking business. But yes, profit is so industry specific. You need to be able to assess it based on your own business operations and understand how you're different to the industry, if you're different and operating things in a bit of a different way. And fundamentally, the most important thing is have an idea. So when you do map out your budget and forecast and you can plan ahead for your 1 year, 5 year, 10 year goals, you've got something realistic. Because I tell you what, you don't want to get 3, 4, 5 years in, look at how much money you've made and get disheartened because you didn't understand what the profit capability or likelihood was when you started. So yeah, and look, it's been things that, you know, it's a really important conversation that if you can't have that conversation with your advisor or your accountant and get an understanding of where you stack up compared to the industry, that's a really good one that I think, you know, I had a call with a client the other day who's in the record industry. They sell vinyl records, and a business in the UK was having a look at this guy's business here in Australia, and the UK like gross profit percentage was much higher than Australia. And we looked at that and went, well, it costs so much more to land a shipment of goods down here in Australia to then ship over a giant, huge country compared to in the UK, they're able to get landed a lot cheaper and shipped to people that are a lot closer. So their cost structure is different. So again, being able to look at profitability and understand why are things different for you versus another business.
Well, brilliant advice, Jason. I just go, you know, when you're getting into a particular industry, and I've seen this with cafe owners working very hard, getting, you know, some not getting the returns they expected and really burning through time more than anything else. But what I really like about the benchmark is you can then ask yourself the question of how do I beat that benchmark? What's my competitive advantage? What's my point of difference that I'm going to bring to the market to actually do a lot better than that benchmark as well, depending on your personal goals. But I really like that as understanding the foundation for the industry, looking at the benchmarks, and then setting yourself the challenge to be able to, you know, do a lot better than that and working out how to do that, strategizing around that. But I think that's brilliant. I love that.
And you talk about understanding what you want from the business and understanding what other industry peers are doing and what can be expected, but just the whole understanding is big for me. Like, even if you're a cafe owner, even if you're a mortgage broker or a car salesman, you need to be across profitability. You need to be across, you know, Marty, you talked about, I'm not saying you need to go through and put ticks next to every debit, but as the business owner, I've had a client who had a particular business wasn't across any of their cash flows, was very good at what he did, but left all of the cash flow, all of that stuff up to someone else. Now, I'm not saying that he should have done that himself because that wasn't where his strength was, but it's the buck stops with him. It's his business. He needs to be across it. And whether he's got full confidence in that person or not, in my opinion, you need to understand what your cash flows are. You need to engage with the people that are managing it for you, because if you don't understand it and then that person screws it up, then it's game over. There's a lot of the time there's no coming back from that. So if you're a business owner, learn about it, understand your cash flows, understand what your profitability should be. And you know, to Marty's point about setting your target profitability ratio and sticking to it. Look, we don't make decisions, or we make decisions based on what our target is this year. So we don't just spend money. If it's a big spend, we sit down, we have a look at it, and if it's going to push our profitability ratios out, it's a no. It's pretty simple, and unless it's something that is going to create more profit for us. So, and then you get to the end of the year, and then you're happy. You're happy with the year you've had, and then you go and look at the next year, and then you build in your spends or your growth into that next year. The other thing too, just quickly, is there's also the opportunity that someone taps you on the shoulder and wants to buy your business at some stage, whether you're a cafe or a mechanic or whatever it is. The first thing they're going to do is say, give us your profit and loss. And if your profit ratios aren't where they need to be or aren't where they should be based on industry standard, no one's going to buy your business. So, you know, they say that you should always be ready to sell, but in saying that, the main thing there is you need to have good numbers. Otherwise, who's going to want to buy your business? You can't say, oh, look, we've focused on growth this year and, you know, I've taken some cash as a cafe owner, so it's not where it's meant to be. Well, that's great, but you're asking me to take your word for it. So you need to get those right as well, particularly, and if you are going to sell and if you are sort of 2 or 3 years out from selling, profitability needs to be a major focus for you, no matter what your industry is. So yeah, just always be prepared.
Listen in, business owners. If you've devalued your business by not having the profitability right, why should anyone else pay top dollar for it? You know, it's simple. It's as simple as that. And you know, people are savvy that are buying businesses too. You know, they're going to utilize that against you because that's your weak point, and they can expose that. But if you've got profitabilities at a strong level, and you know, you've got great growth, you've got great talent, great systems, great tech, then they're going to pay top dollar because they have to. It's like you've put all the numbers and trends in your favor, and you're giving yourself the best chance to get a good result for your business. So don't devalue your business. By learn to love the numbers. And like I said, if you're not strong at it, get someone in, but understand it. I know so many people go, I love doing the business, love doing the front end stuff. I'm not interested in that stuff. I'm not interested in the numbers. Okay. If you're not interested, well, I guarantee you, you'll come unstuck as a business owner.
Knowing those.
Get comfortable making profit and paying tax. If you're in the right tax structure and you're minimizing to 25% on every dollar of profit, well, you know what? That's cool. You're making money. You've got profit. That means when you go to the bank, or, you know, off the back of last week's episode where we talked about buying a home, when you go to the bank and you're showing profit, sweet, you actually got a chance of getting your mortgage to buy a home. Whereas the business owners that for years have focused on, I don't want to pay any tax, not showing any profit, thinking they're making a lot of money, and then getting to the bank and the bank goes, well, there's no profit in the business. I can't give you a loan.
How many people go, oh, I got a tax refund. Yeah. Yeah, I got a tax refund. Okay, no one talks about, yeah, I made a profit. Yeah. I made this profit. Yeah. It's like, I got a tax refund. You got to get out of that mentality.
But it gives you, the other thing that springs to mind is it gives you confidence and clarity to make decisions to move your business forward as well. So, you know, we talked about growth.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, profitability versus, you know, reinvesting to grow. But I know with our business, you know, if we have a really good year profit-wise, we understand our numbers and our ratios inside out. So that then gives us the tools we need to make a decision on where do we go next from a growth point of view. And when you have the profitability banked, it's so much easier to make those decisions. When you haven't made any money, hypothetically, if you haven't made any money and you're trying to grow or take on new opportunities, you're not going to do it because you're looking at your numbers and you're saying, we're not making any money. If you're banking profit, you're confident in what's happening. You know your numbers. You know that you can go and then reinvest a certain amount into the, into growth. So it gives you the confidence and clarity to continue to progress your business as well.
And it gets exciting too, doesn't it? Like, I mean, when you see that profitability rising and you see the cash flow and you can reinvest that to generate more opportunity and revenue, it's an exciting trend to get into. And I know you, at some point you'll get capped somewhere down the line on the height of that profit, but it's good to keep testing it, stress testing it, seeing what you could do better. It's thrilling when it comes off and it's working as it should work. Mm. Jay, sorry.
And look, it empowers your decision making as a business owner as well. If you understand that you aren't in line with the industry, you know, you then get to assess, am I too cheap? Maybe my prices are too low and I'm not building in enough profit margin into my top line revenue. So there's no chance of me having bottom line profit at the end of the week, end of the day, end of the month, and end of the year. So, or, you know, I had an agency that was paying so many staff, so much wages, but the staff weren't efficient. They weren't turning jobs over and getting jobs out the door. So projects were actually losing money because the staff weren't efficient. So again, knowing the benchmarks were that, you know, for every 100 grand of wages spent, this business should have been bringing in 300 grand of income, and it was half of that. And it turned out the team weren't efficient. The team were kind of kicking back, just, you know, there was no time tracking. There was no assessment and performance assessment of the staff. So again, but the reason we looked at that was looking at the profit didn't match the benchmark or the rest of the industry. The wages were up compared to revenue. So it drove conversations of knowing those industry benchmarks and structures of cost that you should be paying. That's another way of looking, tying a little bit off topic, but it might be like the carpentry business that gets audited by the ATO because they can see how much materials have been spent compared to revenue. So if you're banging materials through, you've got no profit and your revenue doesn't match it, that's how the ATO also looks at your cost structure and your industry benchmarks to pick out who to target for a tax audit. So, you know, that builder who might have accepted a little bit too much cash and still ran the materials through the books, their materials doesn't line up to what the ATO expects the revenue to be. So then you become a target. So know your numbers. It's so important. And obviously this one's more about profitability, but understanding all of those cost structures, ratios will help you as a business owner to really make
it. Set yourself a challenge too, just for a bit of fun in your business. Set yourself a challenge and, you know, pick a number, whether it's 25 to 30% or 20 to 25%, pick a number. And then usually there'll be three changes within the business, the three of the most impactful, relevant changes in the business that you can make to attempt to hit that number. And just go through it with friends, accountants, business partners, and just brainstorm it because you've got a business and it's just tweaking a lot of the times to getting it to, you know, those things you're talking about, Jason. What are the impact points you can hit to get to that point?
Guys, this has been episode 41 of The Numbers Game. Don't know about you guys, but I've loved it. It's been an absolute ripper. Marty, what are your key takeaways?
Profit first. I shouldn't say that. You've got to have something that the market wants first. But again, profit is more important than you think. And a lot of people put it as a secondary item on their thought process. Make it a real clear first item on your thought process. Nick?
For me, it was profit giving you the confidence to continue to grow. You know, I think if you're banking money, then you can continue to reinvest and grow your business. If you're not making any money, you're on a hamster wheel and you're going nowhere. So don't think about profit just, you know, helping you make more money or giving you more things. Profit really underpinning the strength of your business and helping you go to that next level.
Jace, what do you pick up out of today?
Yeah, look, there's heaps, but I've loved, you know, even hearing you use the words debits and credits and tracking things coming in and out of the business, Marty, you know, my accounting brain kind of spikes when those words are thrown around. But, you know, understanding, you know, from profit and then working your way back, how does the profit end up on that bottom line? Why is it 10%, 20%? What changes can you make, as you said, Marty, to have the biggest impact on your bottom line? And then tie that back into what does that do for your life? Like, what are you working towards from a values point of view, and why is it so important? They're all things that come together. And, you know, if you can dig into your industry specifically and find out what's going on in your industry and how you stack up. It's going to empower you to make some great decisions for the future of your business.
You've been listening to episode 41 of The Numbers Game. Make sure you don't keep us a secret. Yeah, tell your friends, tell your business associate, tell your loved ones, tell your kids. Get them in early. Until next time, guys, thank you. It's been a very robust, profitable discussion. Game over.